Chapter 34. Winton. Gilly could no longer keep up with the family when walking to the town centre. Her hips or back hurt too much to climb the steep staircase. Her once silky coat fell out in patches and sores multiplied on her broken skin. She no longer stirred to chase squirrels or greet homecomers. Oft times, the dog staggered into a corner, growling at nothing. Finally, she refused to eat. As much as possible, Wren lingered by Gilly's side, stroking her and whispering in her ears. Coming down the stairs early one morning, Wren saw that the dog was absent from the bed of blankets they had made for her comfort in front of the hearth. Wren could not connect with the dog through her talent. The family searched the property, eventually finding Gilly hiding as far away from her pain as she could, in the darkness under the chicken roosts, lifeless. Willem dug a grave in the meadow, and he, Stalia and Wren buried their longtime companion. Wren sobbed for hours. Although she had known that Gilly was failing and she tried to prepare herself, the snapped connection left her bereft. That night, Wren dallied over getting into her bed. The house felt so empty and quiet that she went out to the stable to lean into Syrup's warmth and comfort. As she was reluctantly returning to the cottage, Speckles sent,
"Canine sorrow, Your Majesty."
Wren nodded, a rock-hard lump in her throat. A fortnight after Gilly's death, Willem insisted that she accompany him to Duke Naven's manor. The ducal family had travelled to one of their other estates, and Willem had business with Naven's chamberlain, Orest.
"Do you good, birdie. Get out a bit."
Wren did not have the energy to protest, so she agreed, hoping for a chance to peek into the library that tempted her. Indeed, the Duke's servants allowed her to wait in there for Willem, and the cook plied her with a plate of sweet cakes. Though she didn't dare touch any of the volumes, Wren enjoyed looking at the titles of the books and deciding in what order Mrs. Stalia would ask to borrow them. A book with a black leather binding entitled Weerendale and Oromondo Through the Years pulled at her. She decided this would be the one Stalia would request first. A commotion from outside startled her. A side window gaped wide enough for a slim girl to climb through, so she slid out and ran in the direction of the noise to a nearby paddock. There, a stableman with a replacement front gold tooth cursed and whipped a horse. A young chestnut gelding with white stockings, while the horse screamed in protest. "Stop that! Stop that!" she shouted at the man, forgetting herself, ordering him around as if she had the prerogatives of royalty. Completely astonished, he did halt for the moment.
"Missy, this be a bad-tempered horse. I must break him of his evil habits before the Duke returns. Besides, where do the likes of you get off telling me my business?"
"I can't order this man about, but Willem could reason with him." Wren ran to find her foster father, who was conferring with Orest in his office near the kitchens. Willem accompanied her back to the paddock. She wanted to hurry, but her tetto insisted, "Slow down. Intense situations don't add your own anxiety." In a few moments, they turned the corner and approached the paddock, where the man had stopped laying on the whip but held the horse's cheekpiece in a tight grip. The horse's eyes rolled in fear.
"Nice day, is it not?"
Willem asked the stableman companionably, leaning against the top fence rail.
"Well, not so nice. Look at this bite that damned critter took out of my shoulder."
With his free hand, the man yanked his shirt down from his neck and showed the teeth marks and broken skin.
"Nasty, that,"
Willem commiserated.
"How long have you owned the horse?"
"A week.
Bought him off a passing tradesman, cheap. Thought he would do for the oldest Duchette, being kind of nimble and pretty. Now I'm afeard I spent coin on a horse that's mean and bad-tempered.
While the men conversed, Wren slipped between the fence posts. He isn't bad-tempered, are you, boy? Said Wren, stroking the horse. Fine for the Duchette, if you treat him kindly.
Hey, gal, if knee hurts you, I's not responsible.
Willem ignored Wren's unauthorised presence in the paddock.
Rather a pretty horse, as you say. I see why you bought him, you being a wise judge of horse flesh. You couldn't have known he'd be a biter. That tradesman better make himself scarce in my ward.
Willem rubbed his hands through his hair, making a show of considering.
Hold on now. I might take him off your hands, and I'd swear never to complain about him to the Duke, but I don't have much free coin. As you see, my daughter is taken with him. Awful fine lines.
Willem smiled as he said,
and we've seen his good teeth.
Willem rubbed his hands through his hair again, as if struggling with a problem. Her foster father addressed Chamberlain Orest, who had ambled over to join them.
Perchance we could parley about the gelding over another mug of your cider?
The three men strolled away to make a deal. Wren stroked the horse's neck, reflecting on how Hirteto had handled the conversation, how he sympathised rather than accused or ordered. Wren addressed the horse. Won't you talk to me? The horse's mind opened only a suspicious chink.
Thirsty.
She opened the gate and took him to a full watering trough. He drank his fill. She used her cupped hands to wash the places she could reach where the whip had cut him. He broke wind in noisy gusts, which made Wren chuckle. His long-lashed orbs looked her over more carefully, and he snuffled up her scent, now paying more attention to the small human. With each touch, he opened his mind a little wider. By the time the men came back, shaking hands, he stood outside the stable yard, grazing placidly on the Duke's green a few paces from the Duchess's winter flower bed. On the way home to Winton, Wren tried to thank Willem. He brushed her comments aside.
We've needed a second horse for a long time, Birdie. I just never found one I liked enough, or at a price we could afford. Because the horse put on such a show of being so ill-tempered, we got him for Peapods, and they threw in the tack too.
How do you know he'd respond to kindness?
I see how he behaves with you, but will he act up on Persia or your tetter?
Oh, no, he won't. He will be as gentle as syrup.
How do you know?
He told me so. Wren remembered her old play-acting. I said, horse, will you be safe with my family? And he said, of course, because they would never whip or starve me. When they got home, Stahlia exclaimed over their purchase.
The horse lipped a carrot from her and bunked in the stall beside Syrup, as if this was where he had always belonged.
What with my new commission from Duchess Passingale, we can afford the horse, his oats and more besides, Stahlia said. Isn't he a looker? Almost the colour of a field of barleycorn.
Oh, but 'tis the day for beasts, she continued.
Since morn, a strange dog has been hanging out near the house. I've shooed him away, but he always comes back. Willem and Wren knew all the dogs around Winton, so they strode over to have a look. 30 paces from the cottage stood a dog they'd never seen before. He had a thick head, a big jaw, and a squat body with a broad chest. In truth, he was quite ugly, boasting scars from dogfights or kicks. And he was so underweight that sandbars of bone rippled under his black and brown coat. He stood defiantly braced on all four legs, neither advancing nor retreating as the strangers approached and looked him over.
Astray, ignore him. He'll move on, Willem concluded, and entered the cottage.
Wren heard Tillim's delighted laughter as Willem tossed him up in the air. In the gloomy twilight, Wren knelt to look in the dog's round eyes. Why are you here?
Your Majesty needs a new dog. One came, walked many suns. The Queen must have a strong protector. One is thy shield.
I do need a new dog, but I intended to pick him, not allow the dog to pick me. Where are you from?
Barston.
Did you run off from your master?
No, master. One finds one's own food.
Barston is leagues and leagues away. How did you get here?
One walked. The Queen needs a new dog. One came.
You are mighty forward, aren't you?
Hey,
what did you call me?
The Queen.
No, I am only the Princella. Stay here. Speckles? Speckles, are you nearby? The owl flew to a branch above the stray dog's head. Wren asked him, Didn't you call me Your Majesty the other day? Blinking slowly, Speckles replied that he had. But why? I am the Princella, my mother is the Queen.
See thee.
Speckles rotated his head on his neck one way and then the opposite.
Know thee. Thou art queen.
The only way I could be queen is if my mother has died.
Mother sorrow, your majesty, replied Speckles.
Wren glared at the owl. I don't believe you. She ran into the barn and asked the horses, Who am I? Syrup and Barley blinked drowsily at her.
Does one need to leave the warm stable, your majesty?
Wren entered the house apprehensive and confused, but far from convinced. What do they know? How could they know my mother is on a ship hundreds of leagues from here? Animals have no way of knowing what is happening so many leagues away. But the following day, Persia returned from Gulltown on the postcart. I bring awful tidings, she said, pulling out a broadsheet. The headline blared, Queen Cressa dead. Weerendale in mourning. The broadsheet told the story of the Nargis Fountains and described the sorrow and shock in Cascada. The ground beneath Wren's feet turned both shaky and soupy, as if she could no longer trust that the earth was solid enough to stand upon. She staggered and had to step forward a pace. Her family and other townsfolk were crowding around Persia and the broadsheet, so no one noticed. Throughout an anguished night, Wren kept hoping against reason that the broadsheet was wrong. Mistaken somehow. Her mother had promised to return for her someday. This house, this family, they weren't where she belonged. This was just a temporary haven. Her mother was going to come get her and take her back to the palace. She would show Mama her new skills, and her mother would praise her for how careful and secretive she had been. On solitary walks, Wren had often imagined how grand it would be to shock all her Winton classmates, or the pleasures of rewarding her foster family with lavish gifts. How surprised they'd be, and grateful. And she would be the bestower, rather than the foster waif, a recipient of their charity. Memories of her mother's voice, her face, her touch, made Wren's eyes sting. No one could replace her mother. How could she be gone? The next day, the Winton Church of the Waters planned rites for Queen Cressa. Beforehand, the townsfolk gathered in little knots in the street.
What will happen to us now without our queen? Asked the owner of the Winton Arms.
May the waters save us, said Goody Ginty, because that Regent Matwick surely won't. His lot only cares about power and riches. My brother joined the parity party. It was our best hope. Now they've all gone into hiding or been killed. Cruelty reigns.
Wren, standing close enough to overhear this conversation, flinched. We will endure by the grace of the waters, said Teta Stalia. What else? We have no choice.
Don't feel right at all,
said Sergeant Rooks. It feels like a pond that's gone scummy. We've always had a queen. I fought for that Queen Katrina. What have they gone and done to the young Princella?
If the mum's dead, she's the queen now, put in Goody Ginty.
From what I've read, it's not quite that simple, said Teta Stalia.
To become queen, a Princella must be dedicated in the throne room and Nargis must create her royal stone.
A what? Asked Rooks.
It's a piece of Nargis ice designed just for her, said Stalia. You see one in all the paintings, a different one for each queen.
With the whole community unsettled, Wren's personal grief passed unnoticed. She was free to cry or not, without needing to explain her distress to anyone. When everyone re-entered the church, she sat on a bench as close as she could get to the small fountain, her arms wrapped tight around herself, hoping to be soothed by the waters. But her thoughts tumbled about, wheat chaff in the wind.
Mama, come back.
You said you would. You promised you would.
I thought you were coming for me soon, Mama. I need you.
Sister Nilsepeta spoke quietly about the death of the ruler and about honouring her memory. The townfolk sang the hymns of mourning. Teta Stalia, as usual, led them through the songs. When the churchgoers moved on to prayers for the Princella, Wren slipped outside.
Where was Father? How could this have happened? Where were your shields? If you, who were so protected, can die, what's to save me? Have you left me here, all alone and forever?
She approached the ugly dog who had followed her into town and who currently loitered around the corner of the produce market.
How did you know? Why you?
The dog couldn't provide clear answers. Days ago, maybe the exact time her mother died, he had just felt an overwhelming urge to leave the streets of Barston, where he foraged through garbage as a stray, to seek her out. He knew nothing of Queen Cressa, or ships, or the Pellish. Wren herself had drawn him like a cord. His life's purpose from now on was to protect her from any threat. He assured her he was fierce and vigilant. Wren wondered if her scent had changed when her mother perished. After they returned to the cottage, Wren addressed Stalia as she started to prepare supper.
Would it vex you if we took in that stray? He isn't as sweet as Gilly, but he may be an alert watchdog.
When her foster mother made a face, Wren appealed to her compassion.
He looks so lonely and hungry.
Oh, Wren. Right now, I care not a scrap about mangy dogs.
Maybe she saw a shadow of desperation in her foster daughter's eyes, because in the next instant, Stalia's face softened.
If you insist, we'll give him a try.
But the first sign he's trouble, out he goes.
Wren washed the dog thoroughly in the laundry tub.
He did not look any handsomer clean, but he smelled better. She treated his worn paws, removed all his ticks, and soothed his flea bites.
His short coat felt surprisingly silky rather than bristly to her touch. She named him Backy, brought him inside and fed him.
Perseus scowled at Gilly's unsightly replacement, but Tilim, who now could just stand on his chubby legs, eagerly patted Backy's broad back and steadied himself against the patient pillar the dog provided by remaining stock still. Backy gave Tilim's chin a lightning-quick lick, making the babe giggle.
When Wren and Perseus went to bed, Backy did not follow up the steep staircase. He lay in the front room, eyes and nose directed at the doorway.
I have no one to teach me, but I now have a canine shield to protect me.
In the dark of their bedroom,
after Percy had breathed rhythmically. Wren felt even more angry, bewildered and forlorn. Her chest hurt, as if her heart had literally been shattered into pieces. She longed for just one more day, one more hour with her mother. Speckles rustled at her windowsill to get her attention.
Your Majesty.
Stop calling me that. I don't want to be queen, Wren sent to him. I don't know how to be queen. Mama would have taught me how, so I would be ready when my time came. But she should be with me, to guide me.
Thou hast some time in this nest,
sent Speckles,
and a good nest it be. Learn what thou can. This one and the canine will protect thee whilst thou stretchest thy wings.
I will try, thought Wren. I must try. The harm an evil ruler inflicts is unmeasurable. The future of the Nargis throne now lies on my shoulders. She reached up to squeeze her own 12 summers' shoulders, so scrawny they were barely capable of carrying 2 buckets of water.